We saw that Daniel is getting a vision of things that are going to come. It's in the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar. That's the final king of the Babylonian Empire. And the Persians are not yet on the scene. Now, the Babylonian king had been given a vision of a big statue back in chapter 2, a big image of like a colossus. And Daniel was able to interpret that, that it would go from Babylon to Medo-Persia to Greece to Rome. And then in the seventh chapter, in the first year of Belshazzar, 2 years before the eighth chapter, God gave Daniel another vision of that colossus, and what he showed him was the heart of the kingdoms, because these are the times of the Gentiles, and Israel is no longer at the head of rulership. I was thinking about that, by the way, that God chose a nation amongst all the nations on planet Earth to be the nation through whom the Messiah would come. And he chose Israel. You wonder why. Why the indiscriminate choice of Israel? But the reason was there was a man, a faithful man by the name of Abraham. And God saw of the people on the planet who were all going after idolatry, there was one man questioning in his heart named Abraham and wanted to know truth. And he became a friend of God. And he found grace in God's sight. Now watch what God did. And God took this little man, and from this man, like a seed, like planting a seed in the ground, up grew the tree of the nation of Israel. And that tree grew forth, sometimes likened to an olive tree in the Bible. Sometimes it's likened to a fig tree in the Bible. Sometimes likened to a vine. But it's a tree growing out of the seed of one man that had faith. But he was a man. He wasn't a perfect man, but he was a man who was a friend of God. So what's the outcome? Well, the tree grew, and we knew it had some bad parts to it. It didn't grow into a perfect tree. As a nation, Israel had its troubles, and we read the book of Judges, and we read the book of Kings, and we see the bad kings, and we see all that stuff, and we see that seed of faith by one man grew. And God accepted, but there were imperfections in that tree. I thought about that. That's like one of us. We become a seed. We become a friend of God. And we grow a tree of a family, a tree of life down through our years. But we're not perfect. We have some branches that go bad. We have some things that don't work out. And so God showed the portrait right there. It's a matter of a person getting the right heart with God, but not living perfectly. Now, thankfully, out of that tree of Israel, along came one seed that was the Messiah. And the Messiah now is going to come back one day and replant that nation Israel. And we're going to find out in the book of Romans, all Israel will be saved. It won't have broken branches anymore. It won't have those problems. It can only be redone in the Messiah. But back to where we are with the first tree of the nation Israel, God is showing Daniel the tree is being blown by winds of change, and it's really bending over. And it's at the point now where other trees, I'm letting them have the ascendancy, the times of the Gentiles. Now the cedar tree of Lebanon and the oak tree of Rome and these various trees now are in charge. But I want you to know there's a day coming. I'm going to chop them down and I'm going to rework with that tree of Israel with my son at the head of it. But right now I need you to see these things, Daniel. And one of the things I want you to see is every one of those kingdoms in the seventh chapter, no matter how big they become, no matter how powerful they become, no matter how rich they become, no matter how well developed they become. And by the way, I mean, you know, you look at some of the cities that Gentile nations have built, they're pretty impressive. I mean, you can go online and look at pictures of big buildings with glass and steel, and they're impressive in the day, and then at night they light up, and the cities look impressive. But he says, you know, I want you to see the heart of every one of those Gentile nations. is a predator. It's a beast. It's a lion. It devours people. It devours its own people. It's a bear. It's a leopard. It's like a dragon. I want you to see all these things. Why? So that if you're one of my people, you'll never put your hope in one of those Gentile nations, ever. I don't care if, and it is funny, do you ever notice the word Jerusalem? It's 9 letters. Do you know what the middle 3 letters are? USA. I don't care if it looks like it. It's not Jerusalem. It's not Israel. It's still a Gentile nation. And the people that are going to take over during the times of the Gentiles have the heart of a lion and a beast and a leopard. And they're going to do dastardly, wicked things that are going to devour the faith of people, devour the pocketbooks of people, and devour the lives of their people. They'll chew them up and use them and put a plaque on a wall somewhere after they've spilled their blood for those folks. That's what will happen. So just trying to give pictures to us to understand. Now in the 8th chapter, he has to go on and he gives this vision of verse 3, the ram with 2 horns. And one was higher than the other. Actually, the one that came up last was the higher one. And the ram pushed westward and northward and southward. And he's now showing the pictures of the Medo-Persian Empire that will begin about 20 years after this prophecy is coming. And so Daniel gets this prophecy, and about 20 years later, it actually becomes, and the Persian Empire comes roaring out of the east, and it heads westward, and it took over Babylon in the west. It went northward. It took over Lydia. It went southward. It took over Egypt, and it became the empire. And during the time it was the empire, end of verse 4, it did according to its own will and became great. And there was about a 170-year period where the Persians were the great empire. And then in verse 5, Daniel says, as I was considering and thinking about everything I had just seen. By the way, if you ever think about that, now we're older, some of us in this audience are older. And so I'm talking to the people over 50. The younger ones aren't going to get it at all. But if you're over 50, and you think back on your life and go all the way back to when you were living with your parents, and hopefully if you weren't from a completely, totally broken family, when you were living with your parents might have had brothers and sisters that would be your aunts and your uncles. And there was probably time when you got together. And you may even have some old black and white pictures with the edges frayed of uncle so-and-so and aunt so-and-so and cousin so-and-so. And, you know, all these people. And you knew these people. I remember as a little boy growing up when I was 9 years old. And my dad, he belonged to a bowling league with a couple of his brothers, Uncle Gino and Uncle Roy, and the friends at the Perseverance Club. And once in a while, I could never go, but during Christmas vacation week, you know, they went every Monday night. I'd have Tuesday off and he'd let me go. And I'd go to the bowling league and I'd sit there from 8 o'clock till 11 till they were done bowling, staying up real late for a 9-year-old. And you see all these people. And here's this generation of people. Then you get a little older and Uncle So-and-so died and Aunt So-and-so died. And one generation comes and another goes. And you start seeing the transitions. Now, we didn't appreciate them as kids. But now that we're older, we think that entire generation is practically gone. And now my generation is starting to fade away. And one generation comes and another goes. And Daniel's watching this. And just like with families and people, it happens to nations. And nations grow and they get the ascendancy. And then just like people get old and they get weak, and they die, and they fade off. And he's considering this, and here is this Persian Empire, and really big, verse 4, great, doing according to his will. And as I'm considering and watching the growth, all of a sudden the he-goat comes from the west. And we learn in verses 20 and 21, because thankfully Gabriel comes to explain the dream to him, the ram that thou sawest with the 2 horns is Medo-Persia. And the rough goat, that he-goat coming the other way, is the king of Greece. And here comes the Grecian Empire, coming from the west, moving across the face of the earth. I mean, it's way out there in Europe. We're over here in Persia. That's a long way off. And here they come across Europe, across Asia Minor, across Asia, working their way there. Touch not the ground. Move very swiftly. The growth and the movement of Alexander the Great, who was the first leader of Greece. He started that rapid blitzkrieg attack with his troops. He, you know, with a 60,000, he overtook 200,000 because he caught them by surprise, the surprise attacks. And he came to the ram in verse 6, the one that had two horns, the Medo-Persian, which I had seen. And he ran into him in the fury of his power. And Alexander the Great hated the Persians. And the reason was, in that 170 or 200 years where Persia was growing, in part of their growth, they went westward and they pushed a little toward Greece and they did a few things. They destroyed the Acropolis in Athens and they looted. It was notorious for these devouring nations. If they weren't going to devour their own people, they'd devour the neighbors nearby. And they'd go and they'd steal from them. And they had pillaged and taken things from Greece. And when Alexander, as a young boy, heard from his father, Philip of Macedon, who was the king of Greece when it was very small, it still wasn't a full country or empire. It was more like a city-state. And when he heard about this, he was just, his whole life was filled with revenge, and I'm going to go after them. And he came after the Persians at the end of verse 6. In the fury of his power, he came close to the ram, and he was moved with choler, with a bitter anger against them. And he smote the ram. He took them on in full-blown war, and he broke the two horns. And Alexander took over. And we see all this. And we learned in verse 8 that the he-goat waxed very great and was strong. And we know the Grecian Empire in its ascendancy in the days of 330, 300, 270, 260, 230 B.C. as it was growing and powerful. It was the world empire for a while there until the Romans came and then took it from them, just as the dream of Nebuchadnezzar and the dream of Daniel showed, because God showed this is what's going to happen in the times of the Gentiles. And we saw also that the he-goat, when he was strong, verse 8, his horn was broken, and he was broken off in death, and he died of marsh fever and alcoholism at 33 years old. And we noticed that the he-goat, historically, was Alexander the Great. But we also noticed that after the he-goat died, verse 10, it waxed great even to the host of heaven and cast down some of the host, because out of it, verse 9, came a little horn. So the great horn was Alexander the Great, and the little horn, historically, was Antiochus Epiphanes. But God, you know, wants Daniel to get some understanding that this is beyond just the near future to you. And the only way he's going to get this is when Gabriel shows up, verse 16. Gabriel, make this man understand. And so Gabriel came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid. I fell on my face. He said to me, understand, O son of man, at the time of the end shall be the vision. And he's saying, I know there's a near-term prophecy, just like the first coming of Christ. But there's a far-term prophecy before the second coming of Christ at the time of the end. Verse 19, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall come. And we were looking at it and we were thinking it through, that the great horn of chapters verse 5 through 8 was Alexander the Great. The great horn, Alexander the Great, historically. And the little horn was Antiochus Epiphanes. And with the thing we knew about Antiochus, he was interested in religion, and we studied how he came to Jerusalem, and he took over the temple, and he set up new sacrifices in the temple, and he changed the religious worship at the temple, and he's the little horn. But then we thought, well, what will this be at the end time? Well, Alexander the Great is a portrait of the Antichrist. And Antiochus Epiphanes is a portrait of the false prophet who's interested in religion and wants everyone to worship the Antichrist. I mean, like it says, the little horn came out of the great one. Yeah, the little one is going to be talking about the great one. And we studied that last week in the book of Revelation. And Teresa made a great observation that I missed. Alexander the Great died at 33. And if you read your Bible very carefully, the Antichrist is going to imitate Jesus Christ. So let me help you with it. Go to Luke chapter 3. Go to Luke chapter 3. I don't have any notes here. We're going off the top of my head. I want to show you some things. Sorry about the busy week I had. And I want to give you my interpretation of the ram and the he-goat and how that's going to be the beginning of World War III. But before that, we'll look at some other things. Luke chapter 3. Now, I was discussing this week with some Christians who thank the Lord they're saved. But they have no interest in God's Word. And I understand that. The average modern American Christian has no interest in the Word of God, a King James Bible. They're interested in using whatever counterfeit they want. And they were trying to discuss with me, well, isn't the New King James close? And I said, yeah, it is close. I said, like if I had a real good counterfeiter that could make a $20 bill that looked real close to the real thing. So good of a $20 bill that the average policeman couldn't even pick it out. And the average store owner couldn't. But when it finally got to the mint, a federal agent would look at it and go, this isn't real. And the devil likes to counterfeit things. And he wants to counterfeit close to what God does. And putting the Bible aside, the Antichrist wants to counterfeit Jesus Christ. So in Luke chapter 3, if you remember, it says here, verse 23, Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age. This is when he began his ministry. God waited and kept him under wrap for 30 years. God did not allow him to be famous for 30 years. God kept him in a little town in Nazareth. And when he was 12 years old, you remember Jesus went to the temple and asked questions. I want to be about my Father's business. And his Father in heaven had to tell him, that's wonderful. You want to be about my business. And I'm glad you're studying and I'm glad you're reading and I'm glad you're praying. But you know what one of the commandments is? Commandment number 5, honor thy father and thy mother. And that woman there, Mary, is your mother. And that man is your earthly, he's your stepfather. And you have to go back and be subject to him for the next 18 years because I want you to pass the fifth commandment. And even if you're smarter than them, you're going to listen to what they say, aren't you? And you're not going to gainsay anything they say, are you? Because I'm testing your obedience to pass that fifth commandment. Because I know the people in the audience right there at 271 haven't passed it. And someone's got to pass it for them. Go back. Pay attention for 18 years. 6 plus 6 plus 6. You obey. And he did. And he went back. And for 18 years he listened to whatever they said. Even if they said something that didn't make sense. Take out the garbage. I took it out. Well, go keep an eye on it. Okay. I mean, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. He did it so that he could pass that fifth commandment for you. Because if I'm looking at you, I'll bet you've broken it once or twice in your life. And someone had to keep it for you, and he did. But then, when God had seen, now it's time for the ministry, he sent him to be baptized of John the Baptist, and the Holy Ghost came on him. It was time to start his ministry right here at about 30 years of age. And that's when he began. Well, guess when the Antichrist is going to take over? At 30 years old. It's going to take over at 30 years old. And guess what's going to happen to him 3.5 years in? He's going to die, just like Alexander the Great did at 3.5 years in. But the difference is God's going to allow a false resurrection for him. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. Anyway, so good pickup, Teresa. Yeah. Yes, you've got a question. Verse 10 of where? Daniel 8, verse 10. Yes, and it waxed great even to the host of heaven. In the greatness of Antiochus and doctrinally the false prophet, his greatness is going to be unto the service of God and the host of heaven. In other words, I'm religious. I'm interested not just in earthly things, but in heavenly things. And my greatness is going to be, people are going to go, wow, he really knows spiritual things. And what he's going to do, he wants to cast down some of the host and the stars to the ground and a stamp on them. Now, I can see that spiritually and allegorically. I'm not sure physically how God will allow that, except maybe going, now I can see the physical. In Revelation chapter 1, I think it's verse 19. Let me just make sure I got it right. Verse 20, the seven stars which thou sawest in the right hand, the seven stars are the angels of the seven churches. So literally, there will be stars of the host of heaven. And I know this is, I don't like the multi-level thinking of the Bible, but sorry, it is multi-level thinking. Here's the reality. God sees me as an angel. God sees me as an angel. Now, why is this? I am an evangelist. See the word angel in there? I am a messenger here at the church. By the way, remember when the devil tried to, you'll be as a gods one day? We will be. We will be. God will have us as angels speaking his word. Right now he's doing it physically. And these will be some of the hosts of heaven and stars he'll be killing at that time. The false prophet will be killing some of God's people. As it says in the book of Revelation, he was given power to make war against the saints and to kill some of them and to shed their blood. So that would be the literal doctrinal interpretation. Back in Antiochus' time, he probably killed some Jews. But the main thing he's trying to kill is people's faith in true faith and truth. Yeah. Yeah. And that's something we'll study in Revelation 2 about the angels being cast out of heaven. You're right. They've been cast out of God's heaven, but they still float in this one. And in Revelation 12, they'll be cast out of this one and have to come down to planet Earth and walk. They won't be allowed to fly anymore. And that's in the mid part of the trip. But we'll get there when we do Revelation in a while. But back here, what I'm observing is we've got the Antichrist as the great horn. We've got the false prophet as the little horn. And this is what's going to be happening at the time of the end. Now, let's see what else he says. Verse 23, in the latter time of their kingdom, that be the kingdom of the four that stood up in the place of Alexander the Great, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. Now, I think what he's trying to do here is to show us, and we'd have to go to Revelation 13 and we'll study that when we get there, is that let me just real quick show you. Go to Revelation 13, look at verses 1 and 2. I don't like prophecy anymore because it's so poly, like a polygon. It's got so many sides to it and so many connections. Revelation 13, 1 and 2, when I was on the sand of the sea, and I see the final beast come up out of the sea with seven heads and ten horns, and upon the horns, ten crowns, and upon the heads, names of blasphemy. And the beast which I saw was like, look at, the leopard, the bear, the lion, and the dragon. It's a conglomeration of some Babylonian, some Persian, some Grecian, and some Roman. I mean, it's all brought together in that last empire. The world always talks about coexist and getting together and integrating. And God says, okay, then I'm going to allow them to integrate this whole bunch of wickedness all together into one big mess. That's what I'm going to let them do. And so that's the picture there. And verse 23 in Daniel 8, the king of fierce countenance is going to come at the very end. That is the great horn or the Antichrist himself. Understanding dark sentences shall stand up. God is going to give him wisdom. He speaks about this in Ezekiel 28, about all the wisdom that he's going to allow this man to have. The average man on the street, as you well know, is not that bright and is confused about a lot of things. and we're looking for someone with answers. And this guy will have a bunch of what appears to be good answers, but they'll be earthly, carnal, physical, mortal, short-term answers. They're not spiritual. They're not eternal. But he'll come forth dark sentences. His power shall be mighty, verse 24, but not by his own power. We saw that the dragon's going to give him his power. The devil's going to empower him. Who empowered Jesus Christ? God the Father. Who's going to empower the Antichrist? The devil. Satan. He shall destroy wonderfully. He's going to have the ability to do wonders and signs and miracles, which is what people seem to want. We're here tonight. It's a Wednesday night. We had our prayer meeting. Do you know what people like for in prayers? Miracles. They like to give me prayer requests for miracles, miracles, miracles. You know what Jesus said about that? An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign and a miracle. I usually don't like to answer the prayer request or pray it. I pray for God's will. And you know what the greatest miracle is for God? The new birth. He'd rather you ever get born again and die of stage 4 cancer than to be healed and stay unborn again. What good is that? But this guy's going to be able to do miracles. And they're going to love him. People want miracles. At those phony, cheap tent meetings that come around, the signs and the wonders and the charismatic garbage that comes around, people show up. We went to those when we were young. We watched people standing in line waiting to be touched and wanted a miracle. Everybody wants a miracle. Well, this guy's going to be able to do wonders and miracles, but notice what he does. He destroys wonderfully. Those miracles don't give eternal life. Those miracles don't answer the questions of eternity. They end up destroying people. Talk to someone that won a lottery. There's a miracle. 1 in 10 million. Woo! See how they do. They couldn't manage before. You think they can manage now? It destroys them wonderfully. It ruins their family. You want all that money? You didn't give some to me. I'm not talking to you anymore. I mean, the families break up. All kinds of things happen. He'll destroy wonderfully. And he personally is going to prosper and practice and will destroy the mighty. And he's going to be able to wrest power from Joe Biden, if you can imagine that. And he's going to, who could figure? But not only that, not only in the governmental realm is he going to go after the mighty, he's going to go after the religious realm. And 25, through his policy, he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand. Probably witchcraft. Things like that, the secret arts. He shall magnify himself in his heart, just like the devil did. And by peace he shall destroy many. He shall stand up against the prince of princes, and that's what he's going to do. He's going to stand in the temple saying, I am God. And the false prophet, who will be a pope, is going to point at him and go, and this is the Messiah we've been waiting for. We were wrong all those years believing it was Jesus. It's this one right here. And, of course, the Associated Press will pick it up. The Pope says he's the Messiah. And that'll be it, because they'll listen to anything he says, and so will NBC. But he'll be broken without hand. And the vision of the evening and the morning, which was told me, is true. And then the instruction given by Gabriel the prophet, shut up the vision. For it shall be for many days. I mean, there's no need for you to have to tell it to these people right here in Babylon. You don't even have to tell it to all these people before the first coming. You can write it down, but no one's going to understand it. This thing is finally going to be opened up with understanding around the time of the second coming. It's going to be a long time. I'm giving you a long view picture as to what's going to happen in the future. I'm showing you the end. From the midpoint here, I knew it from the beginning, God says. I knew it in Genesis 1:1, but I'm revealing it to you now. Now is the time for you to write it down. And I fainted, Daniel says. And I was sick at thinking this whole world, from the time I'm living in 558 BC when I'm getting this prophecy, until the time of the second coming is going to be in the hands of people like this. It's going to be a sick, sordid history of mankind. Have you studied any of the history of mankind? Now, I didn't bring the numbers with me, but 6,000 plus wars of all the years of recorded mankind. By the way, recorded mankind only goes back to about 2250 BC. And then there's nothing they can find before that. I wonder why that is. There was a flood before that. And before that, they call it, they got recorded history and prehistoric times. That's right, because it's before history. Nobody could read back then. Nobody could write back then. All records were destroyed. Boom. And they go all the way back to 2250 BC, and they study the history of mankind. So where are we today at 2000? So about 4,200 plus years of history, and there was only, I think, 173 years where there wasn't war. That was during what's called the Pax Romana. And although there was kind of a peace, it was a peace with everyone's arm twisted behind their back like a bully would do to you and put your arm behind your back, say uncle, and people kind of said uncle, and they didn't dare fight because the Roman army was there. And that's not really peace. There is no peace to the wicked. And Daniel thought about this and he fainted. And it troubled him. And listen, if you're a real Bible-believing Christian, and thankfully most people aren't, so they can go on living in ignorance and bliss. If you are, this world makes you sick. It makes you sick. Just like Daniel is right here. Yes. Seven years. He has a full 7 years where he rules. I would say he's about 28 and a half. Yeah, would be my guess. Now, anyways, so looking at this particular chapter of the Ram and the He-Goat, God was focusing on the Medo-Persians and focusing on Greece. And he said, understand, end of verse 17, O son of man, at the time of the end shall be the vision. So I started thinking, well, I'm living now like real close to the time of the end. So who would the ram be today and who would the he-goat be today? So I was just trying to think about it. Now, I went back to here and I saw the ram in verse 3 has two horns. One that's high, and the higher one came up last, and the little one. And I saw there's going to be this big war between the ram and the he-goat. Now, I knew that the he-goat, because it said to me in verse 8, the he-goat is very great, and the he-goat has a great horn. And I said, well, then the he-goat obviously represents the leader of the final empire. And they're going to fight against the ram. And I'm trying to think, well, who could the ram be? Well, historically, geographically, it came out of Medo-Persia. It's eastern. It's kind of, it's not Japheth. It's not European. It's eastern. It tends to be a Shemitic. And then I thought about something that started around 600, which was Mohammedism or Islam. And I thought about Islam, and Islam had his leader, which was Muhammad. And when he died, I got a book over here by a former Muslim, Islam Unveiled. Actually, two former Muslims. It's Ergum Kaner and Emir Kaner. And I guess their father was an imam, and they grew up in Islam, and then they got saved. And an insider's look at the Muslim life and Muslim beliefs. And in here, as he's going through the history of it, he's looking about when Muhammad died and the battle that came for taking over Muhammad's then empire. You know, when something, a movement has begun and there's a leader at the spearhead of the movement, when he dies, there's a vacuum and someone wants to take over. You even remember they came to Jesus and said, can we sit at your right hand? what's going on here? There's something about us in our natural man, and these were disciples, but they still had a natural man, that, hey, I'd like to be as a God. I'd like to be in charge. I want to be at the center of things. I just don't want to be, you know, some doorkeeper around here. I'd like to be the guy up there at top. I like the prominence. And that's a natural response. And there was a vacuum when Muhammad died, and the battle became between his relatives and those were his generals, so to speak, or whatever. And the relatives took control at first, and they formed a branch of Islam called Shia or Shiite. The Shiites, and they were the ones at first. Now, the other ones who weren't related, and there was more not related, built up another group called the traditional one, or the Sunnah, or the Sunnis. And they came up later, but they became much bigger. And today, if you go into Islam, it's 15% Shiite and 85% Sunni. And most of the Muslim nations are Sunni Muslim. And the Shiite one is Iran, is almost all Shiite, and they're very aggressive. They're like hornets. They like to fight. The Sunnis have learned how to get along with people like the Saudi Arabians. Okay, we got oil wells. You want to dig oil for us? We'll take all the money. Go ahead. Dig your Mobil, Shell, come over here, do all that. And so they've learned kind of how to get along, but the Shiites are constantly, they're the ones that like to start problem. And the Shiites and the Sunnis, and these are the two horns of the ram. Now, the he-goat would represent the rebuilding and the one part of that final empire that's going to come. That's the Antichrist empire. And I was thinking, the Muslims, go back to Genesis chapter, I think it's 17 or 16, let me find it. In our studies before, we've observed Genesis chapter 16. And when Abram went into Hagar, and she conceived, and then she got pregnant with the child, and then Sarah got mad at her and dealt hardly with her, and then Hagar fled. And in verse 7, the angel of the Lord found Hagar out by a fountain of water in the wilderness, by a fountain on the way to Shur out there in the eastern provinces. And the angel of the Lord said in verse 11, behold, thou art with a child. You're pregnant in there. I did the ultrasound. And thou shalt bear a son, and you're going to call his name Ishmael, because the Lord hath heard thy affliction, and he shall be a wild man, and his hand against every man, and every man's hand against him. And he'll dwell in the presence of his brethren, meaning the Jewish brethren. And today you've got all those Muslim nations right around Israel. Now, the name Ishmael has seven letters, and five of them are Islam, I-S-L-A-M, and the two letters left over are H-E, He Islam. It's a picture of the ram with the two horns. And the truth of the matter is, he is a wild man. And he's against every man, and every man's against him. And I know initially they did all their work in the first number of centuries, all in the Middle East, but they started to foray into Europe. They started to move into Africa. They started to move in the eastern direction toward, they didn't get too far in China or India, but they have in Pakistan, and they have moved in other areas, and they moved across into the seaways over there, and Malaysia, and places like that. And now they're all over the world. And lately, the Shiite ones have been inciting people to cause trouble all over the world. And they have little terrorist cells that explode and might blow up a theater, or maybe go to a mall and cause a problem, or just incite some of their kids to take a car and drive into a crowd or a truck. And they do these things. It's been going on all over the world. And my thought is, go to Revelation chapter 6. These are my thoughts. If you don't see it, I really don't care. Whatever you say is fine by me. It doesn't matter. We're not going to be here anyways. We're up and out of here in the fourth chapter of Revelation. But if we did make it to the sixth, then maybe we'll get to watch from up there. In the sixth chapter, after we disappear in the fourth, and we're up there, let's say, worshiping in the fourth and fifth chapter for a while and watching the worship services, then the lamb starts to go to work, the one that took the book in chapter 5, and the lamb starts to break the seals on the book, and this is the title to planet Earth. And he breaks the seals, and right away we see verse 2, a white horse, and the one that sits on him has a bow, and this is the crown given to him. Go ahead, you can take dominion of planet Earth. This is time for fallen man to have his last ride running things down there before the Lamb's going to come back. And he went forth conquering and to conquer. And he needs to start a world war on every continent. And you need an enemy to start a world war. And Hitler, you know, wanted to have that go against the Jews, but how many Jews are and how many are there? But Muslims are everywhere. And now you can see the he-goat being this European leader coming forth one day to a microphone and saying something like this. You know, people of the world, if you look around and you think and you consider when the printing press came out and we had the Enlightenment and the Renaissance, And we had the Industrial Revolution and the Agricultural Revolution and the Scientific Revolution all in the 15 and the 16 and the 1700s. The leaders of it was us in Europe. It's we, the Romans, and we, the Greeks. It was Europeans that did this. All the great inventors, all the great cities have been built by us. And they've all followed our outline and blueprint. And we began building in Europe, and then we built in England, and we built in America, and then other nations said, come and build here, and we showed them how to build, and we helped rebuild the Japanese, and the Chinese said, well, how do we do it? And they started building like us, and we've done this all over the world. And in the 600s, long come these Mohammedans, trying to live like it's the 7th century, and running around with veils on their face, and towels, and stuff like this, and they don't do anything except cause problems. It's time for us to take the world back. Who's with me? Look out, man. The ram and the he-goat and the beginning of World War III. Now, you say, I don't believe that. Okay, I don't get that. And I don't follow that at all. Not me sitting here in a pew. Go to a bar and talk to some motorhead. Talk to some guy that works in a factory and see what he thinks. What he's been listening to for the last 50 years are very liberal, dumb leaders going, well, it's a religion of peace. We really can't say anything about it. It's no different from ours. And along comes the Pope and the Antichrist going, it's a lot different. And they're the ones that have caused the problems. Who's with me? And you think Donald Trump got a following in America? Wait till you see worldwide how the ram and the he-goat ignites World War III. And that would be my take on what I saw here. And then when we'll study the Revelation, Book of Revelation, we'll see those things too. But I began to see this back in 2006 for the first time. This isn't anywhere else. It's just me. So I could be nuts. I always figure Brother Mike is nuts. Everyone else is right. And that's fine. But I began to see these things and I said, wow, he's a wild man. Every man is against him. And his hand is against every man. And I can see how easy it would be for a man to step to the microphone and go, who's with me? Are you with me? Do you think it's right for our women and our children and our schools to be safe again and never have to worry about people taking over our airplanes? Is it time? And every place our missionaries are, they'll tell you all over the world, they got problems with the Mohammedans. Yes. I have no idea. Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Now, go ahead. Yes. Care. Yes. So they were ordering drinks. The women were drinking. So look at here. Listen, can I listen? There's only one spirit of truth. Okay? You know what Jesus said in Matthew 23 seven times over to religious people? You're hypocrites. He never said that to his children. You're not hypocrites. Every religion on this planet is hypocritical in God's sight. They're the hypocrites. The hypocrisy begins at the root. And the root is they claim they know God and they don't. That's the beginning of hypocrisy. The only thing that thing can bear is a life of hypocrisy. And so no matter what they say, they may not show you they drink alcohol. They probably drink alcohol. They're hypocrites. Jesus called them hypocrites. Religious people are hypocrites. But anyways, my thought is that's the ram and the he-goat in the last days. The two horns are Islam, Shiite and Sunni, and the he-goat is the Antichrist coming forward, say, someone's got to take them out with choler, with anger, across the whole earth. He said across the face of the earth. Read the chapter again, and it seems to me that would be the spark for World War III. That would be my thought. And if not, doesn't matter. I'm not going to be here anyways. I'm not here for Revelation 6. And that's tonight's study, and I'll try and get back and do better work with you in the future, because I am getting old and feeble. Amen.